Get ready. We got a full house today. Welcome to The Jump. I'm Jordan Sedano, in for our fearless leader, Rachel Nichols. I'm joined by Ramona Shelburne, ESPN NBA insider and NBA champ, and one half of the All the Smoke podcast duo, Matt Barnes. Coming up, we'll get into why Mark Cuban is heated with some of the reporting around Luka, Rick Carlisle, and the Mavs. But first, let's start with the Nets, who were dealt a tough hand yesterday when Kyrie Irving left the game with a sprained right ankle. He didn't return to the game, and our Rachel Nichols reported that Kyrie left the game on crutches and in a walking boot, with James Harden's status also in question at the moment. Here's what Steve Nash said after the game.
I have no idea, you know, what's going to happen with Kyrie in the coming days. You know, we'll cross our fingers and hope that it's better than missing the next game. You know, it is tricky with Kev. We all got to pitch in. We all got to play together. We got to move the ball. And I thought tonight we got a little single-minded looking for Kevin every time. Puts a little bit too much pressure on him. It makes us a little more predictable, I thought, which puts a lot of burden on him. Yeah, Kai, x-rays were negative, but we'll have to see how it goes tomorrow and further tests and treatment. And then James, you know, I think it's an independent case. You know, like, I don't want James to be rushed back. If he's able to play next game or the game after, that's fantastic. If he's not, I don't want to rush him back and jeopardize, you know, doing something worse or making this a long-term injury. So we'll see. We'll have to take all these things into account and evaluate them and try to make a smart decision.
All right, Matt, so how does the Kyrie injury change the outlook of this series?
It changes it a lot, and welcome to the NBA head coaching, Steve Nash. I mean, it's kind of been free-flowing. Obviously, they've had to play without stars, but to have two of your stars down at this point of the season is tough. Kyrie's ankle touched the ground, so yeah. Being a former player, you always hope for the best, but I don't really see him returning in the next game or two. Obviously, as Steve said, they don't want to push James. Hamstrings, you can't push even if they wanted to. So James will know early on if he can't go. If they can't, a lot of pressure is going to be on KD to not only score, but empower his team and have them believing in themselves and also be able to make plays for that team, because there's not too many playmakers. This team's offense is predicated upon their normal one-on-one mismatches with their superstars, and then defense adjusts and they make plays for other people. So without two of your three superstars, KD is going to have to burden a lot of the load, but I think he's capable of it, so we're going to see.
You know what they still have? Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Kevin Durant, best player in the world. I mean, Kevin Durant, to me, is the best player still left in the playoffs.
Agreed.
I mean, that's not a diss on anybody else. That's just how good KD is.
Yep.
And I think when you talk about playmakers, like, one, he can create his own shot. Two, I think Blake Griffin can play make a little bit. Matt, you've played with him in that role. Yeah. And there was some question of whether or not Blake was hurt in that game because he didn't play a lot of the second half. I checked on that. He's absolutely fine. There was no injury to Blake Griffin in that game four. So I actually think that's part of why the Nets went and got him. That's why they liked him so much, is because of his ability to play make. In this series, he's been more of a defender on Giannis. But in this series, I think now with if Kyrie's going to be out, Matt's right. Like, I don't know how he's going to play with that ankle as bad as his. And the Nets are a team that have essentially, they've load managed everybody. They've learned how to play like that. And Kyrie is actually the only net who has a negative when he's not on the court. They have a negative net rating. It's like -4.6. Everybody else is positive. So he's the one guy that there's a real effect when he's not on the court. But this is, as you said, welcome to coaching in the playoffs, Steve Nash.
So
have some adjustments.
Coach Barnes, what kind of adjustments would you make with this lineup right now?
AAU coach, first of all.
There you are.
Like I said, KD is, I think Steve made a great point too. I think they, since everyone was down, they tried to force feed KD, and it almost looked like KD was forcing, when we know KD has never really been about that. He is so smooth and efficient and effective that it's just going to be a different role now. I mean, KD hasn't had a situation where he's really had to do everything.
Yeah.
He's going to have to do everything now, which we all think he's capable of. Other guys are going to have to step up, though. This is what you want, though, as a role player. Obviously, you never want to lose your star players, but when role players have an opportunity to step up and they have role players that are capable of doing that, including a Blake Griffin, which is crazy, we're calling him a role player, this team still has what it takes, but I think all the pressure shifts to Milwaukee now.
So can Blake turn back the clock a little bit, and can Joe Harris take on a bigger load here, Mo?
Well, and here's the thing. I'm going to steal Mike D'Antoni saying, "With the ball finds energy."
Right.
Okay, so when you don't have Kyrie Irving out there creating for you, when you don't have him breaking people down off the dribble, the ball just has to move.
Yeah.
Because the ball can move faster than any one player can penetrate or dribble. Okay, so I think in this situation, you just fall back on those offensive concepts that Mike D'Antoni and Steve Nash popularized in Phoenix. I mean, I think that's how they play. It shouldn't matter as much if you don't have, now it hurts because you don't have that guy who can break people down, but they just need to move the ball.
Yeah.
I would like to see Blake get back to what he used to do with us with the Clippers. Because you see so many oftentimes he'll get the rebound and pass it to a guard. Blake was one of the best pushing point forward, ball handling, playmaking bigs we had in the game. So I think he needs to turn back the clock a little bit just on his mindset and his aggressiveness. I think Blake has done a perfect job of doing what they needed him to do. They're going to need him to do more now, and I think he'll be capable of that.
And don't sleep on Bruce Brown. I know a lot of people gave him a lot of grief after game three, but that kid has played really well for
this team
this season. Real quick, before we move on, do you think we'll see Harden in this series?
I don't think we'll see him next game. I think we'll possibly see him in game six, if at all.
I think we only see him if they absolutely have to try. Like the same way we saw Anthony Davis. Like if you're facing elimination, you might as well give him a chance to try to play. But the thing with hamstrings, when you hurt them multiple times, you just need to rest.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. All right. One of the keys to this series for the Bucks has been the defense of PJ Tucker, who held Kevin Durant to 9 points on 3 of 12 shooting as his primary defender in game four. Steve Nash felt that Tucker was a little too physical defensively. Let's take a listen to him after the game.
You know, he's playing extremely physical and made it difficult. You know, that's his role on their team. I mean, you know, I thought it was borderline non-basketball physical at times, but that's the playoffs. You know, you have to adapt and adjust.
So, Momo, do you agree with Coach Nash?
I think he's doing a pretty good job of working, setting the tempo for the next game. Look, P.J. Tucker's a physical player. That's what he does. I mean, that's why you have him on the team. We saw this movie before when he was in Houston. Kevin Durant was in Golden State. We've seen him defend Kevin a few times. He's been pretty effective in that role, but I don't think he'll get away with as much when they go back to Brooklyn.
No.
Right?
Normally after games like this, teams have guys that are going to send a bunch of film to the league. P.J. Tucker, and I'm a defensive-minded guy, so if they're not going to call it, beat KD down. Excuse my language. Beat KD up. That's what you're supposed to do until these refs to call it, make an adjustment. But like I said, there's going to be a lot of film sent in on what he did, and they allowed him to get away with it. There's a few, maybe four or five times where I thought KD drove to the basket and was clearly hacked, and they just didn't call it. Now, if that is playoff basketball, they're going to have to adjust to it. But I doubt that. I think there's going to be a lot more eyes on the situation now that we've kind of seen to go back and forth. But again, KD's going to have to step up, and you don't count on KD having back-to-back bad shooting games because, again, he's probably the most efficient player we've ever seen in this game. So Tucker's going to have his handfuls, but I definitely expect a different type of game because this is old. This is late 90s, early 2000s type defense, and I love it, but you can't play that way anymore. So I was surprised that they allowed him to do as much as they did last game.
You know what's interesting is that we talked about welcome to the playoffs, Coach Nash, right? Well, he's got this part down, right? Yeah. Whether it's Phil Jackson or Pat Riley or Larry Brown or all these guys from back in the day, they worked the officials or the league for these kind of calls, right? Moving forward. It's smart. It's a smart move by him.
Absolutely. This is exactly what you'd like. They said they have a whole crew that I'm sure sent 25 clips to the league, and the league has to look at every single one. And like I said, whether they adjust it or not, these refs are going to be aware of what happened last game, and I expect a different type of game to be called.
Well, they're sending clips to the league, and then they're talking about it in your press conference.
Now we're talking about it.
Yeah.
So expect
mission accomplished there. There you go, Steve. We got you. All right. Let's get to some news out of Dallas today. According to a report in The Athletic, some within the Mavericks organization are concerned about Luka Doncic's desire to remain with the team long term. Some of that frustration stems from some friction with Bob Vulgaris, a well-known sports gambler, basketball gambler particularly, who was hired by the Mavs in 2018, who The Athletic reports is, quote, the most influential voice in the Mavs front office next to Mark Cuban. Mark Cuban replied to The Athletic story on Twitter today, calling it total BS, and he actually used the word, so not just BS. Matt, what's your reaction to this story?
On my kids' podcast, they have a segment called Captor Fact. This is complete cap. I don't see Luka going anywhere. I think he's gonna walk in the shoes of Dirk and probably surpass him at some point. I think he's gonna be a lifetime Maverick. They asked if he's gonna sign a Supermax, and he said earlier, I think everyone knows the answer to that. So Luka's in a great situation. If anything, it just puts a little bit of pressure on him, knowing that they really need to go out and get him a Batman. Porzingis is too inconsistent and too healthy. His health is such an issue, but Luka's perfect in there. Great owner, great system, fan base that loves him to death. So I don't see Luka going anywhere.
By the way, I love the plug for the Barnes boys.
Yeah, come on, man.
Yeah.
Love that.
Total cap, though. Momo, yes or no?
Look, I think when you lose, there's friction. okay? When you lose, there's people who are wondering why did you lose, what went wrong. This is what we do, okay? We either write stories about it or it's discussed internally. I don't think Luka would leave because of conflict with the front office guy. He's not even really the guy there. You know, so to me, like, if Luka were to ever leave, first of all, I think he's going to sign Supermax.
Right.
He's going to be there for a long time.
Well, he said the words. Yeah. I think you know what the answer to that is when asked about that.
Yeah, but we're way too early to be talking about, is Luka going to leave?
Right.
We can start the narrative.
Right.
I mean, obviously, this is what we do. We got a talk show to fill, okay? But I just watched this man have an unbelievable series.
Yeah.
He is that good, and he is ready.
It's going to be his league soon.
Yeah. I mean, he's, like, I did not realize how good he was. I mean, we knew how good he was, but then when you see him in person, you're like, oh, mm-hmm. okay, you're ready. They need to get him somebody because you don't want to waste these years. Usually you say the prime years are, like, 26, 27. No, he's ready.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's 22, and he's ready. Right. So, well, the clock is ticking, but we got a long runway. Let's give the Mavs some time to work here. I mean, they tried one shot with Porzingis here. This doesn't seem like the right pairing.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like Porzingis is a nice player, but probably not the best fit next to Luka. So let's give them some time to maneuver. And after if next season we're going into the same place and he's still losing in the first round, okay.
Well, look at this graphic here where it talks about the potential projection for his potential contract, what they've got in cap space. Because remember, they were one of the teams that was trying to carve out some space for Giannis had Giannis become available.
Right.
So they've got some maneuverability here for sure.
They do. I definitely think they do. I think they need to re-sign Tim Hardaway. I think he has shown his worth time and time again. Very unsung player. The jury's out on Porzingis. I mean, he'll show you flashes where he looks like a top player, then he'll show you flashes where you didn't even know he played. So I think I would love to see more consistency out of him, because when he's playing his game, he is one. They were the top duo last year in the bubble, and they couldn't duplicate that. So again, I think they need to go out and get him a real Robin, and I think this team is sitting in a nice position to contend for the next handful of years.
What has been the biggest difference with Porzingis defensively? Like, I feel like he was a pretty good defender in New York.
Yeah.
And is it injury?
I think it's health.
It's just that?
I don't think he trusts, like, when you watch him land, it doesn't look like he trusts his legs when he lands, right? Like, in a sense that, like, you have to trust your body. When you've had a lot of injuries, that's hard.
Yeah, and he used to go chase down blocks.
Yep.
I mean, that was scary because he's so tall and then so long. Like, he was really a force to be reckoned with. And all that tells me is I don't think he's lost that desire. I think he's either lost the trust in his body or he's not fully healthy that is going to allow him to cover the whole entire floor.
Now, Momo, there was a story about Rick Carlisle, also in Bleacher Report, about him potentially eyeing the Bucks job if that became open. And Mark Cuban addressed that one as well on Twitter and basically said that it was an opinion piece, that it was not a factually based piece. What do we know about Rick Carlisle's future?
Well, look, besides Pop, the longest tenured head coach we have here, head of the NBA Coaches Association. I think the respect for him is all over the league. I mean, you know, maybe unless you ask for Rajon Rondo,
right?
Okay, but look, I think this is going to be Rick's choice if he wants to, however long he wants to coach here. You know, look, Luka has a good relationship with Jamal Mosley on that staff. Like, we know that there are other options there, but I think Rick's an institution there in Dallas.
Yeah, I
can't see him wanting to leave Luka Doncic.
Agreed. I think he's the right fit. Again, I just love Mark Cuban. I mean, he puts out every fire with his own voice, not through someone else. He's going to tell you exactly what he thinks. So again, as we discussed earlier, I think this is just comes with losing. The pot's going to be stirred. Rumors are going to come out, whether it be true or not. But I don't see them losing any of these two key pieces.
Some of it is personality, though, too. I mean, there's certain superstars who are willing to flex. Certain superstars are going to flex their power. I don't see Luka as that type. I mean, do you see Luka as the type to, like, try to force
me? No, I just think he wants to win.
Just wants to win.
Right.
And by the way, so does Mark Cuban.
Yeah.
So, like, before we start saying, oh, there's a problem with Mark, like, let's see what Mark Cuban does here. Like, this isn't an owner who's going to be worried about the luxury tax or the salary cap. Like, this is a guy who wants to get stuff done.
Right. And they have maneuverability. They have the ability to kind of make some things happen this offseason. You mentioned Hardaway Jr. Potentially could come back. And they've got some extra cap space beyond that, potentially. Can they make a deal with some of the current pieces they have to bring in different players? We see in this league that turnover happens regularly. Yep. So it's certainly possible. All right. Coming up, in honor of Kyrie breaking down Thanasis' ankles yesterday. We'll count down the best unfinished ankle breakers in just a moment, so stick around. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm George Sedano filling in for Rachel Nichols alongside Matt Barnes and Ramona Shelburne. Last night, Nikola Jokic was ejected from Game 4, as you saw there, with a flagrant foul 2 after taking a wild swing in frustration at Cameron Payne. Michael Malone and Jokic were asked about it after the game. Let's take a listen.
I think one of you guys should request to ask that question to one of the officials.
I did.
So I'd love to hear your answer. But I don't know. I think it was something along the lines of wind up, malicious intent, some other mumbo jumbo. But obviously, you lose the MVP. It's going to make it even harder to try to stave off elimination.
I wanted to change the rhythm of the game. I wanted to give us some energy, maybe to change the whistle a little bit. So I tried to make a hard foul. Did I hit him? Did I didn't hit him? We don't know. So I say sorry if I did, because I didn't want to injure him or hit him in the head on purpose. So I watched the game in the locker room to cool off a little bit. So
players tweeted after the game, or actually in the moment, actually. Let's go to John Moran, who tweeted, playoff elimination game, give him a flagrant 1 and play ball, man. Trae Young also tweeted, a flagrant 2? Wow. So Matt, was the ejection on Jokic too harsh?
Absolutely. I think if this is a regular season game, you possibly, with how soft the game is called now, that you possibly call this a flagrant 2. But considering the circumstance, elimination game in the second round of the playoffs with your MVP, and you got to look at, you know, his history. He's never had, now, if this was me, I could see them throwing me out in this kind of situation, because I've had some running. But, you know, Jokic hasn't had any of that. He's out there playing every day. Again, this is the MVP in elimination game. If anything, a flagrant 1, and like Josh said, keep it moving. But the fact that you took the best player off his team in an elimination game, and he's the MVP in the playoffs, it's just not a good look. I think they made a mistake.
You know why you're successful in life, Matt? Because you are self-aware.
Yeah, no doubt.
Right? You're like, if this is me, I'm probably getting thrown out.
Right.
And we're friends, so I can say this to you. It's probably true.
Right.
We're all friends here. Yeah. It's definitely true,
yeah,
Matt.
You're also not the MVP.
Right.
No offense.
Exactly.
That's not offensive.
Exactly.
He's the MVP.
Yeah.
I think sometimes you have to have that in your mind when you're in the, like, if you win it, like, I know Jokic is not a traditional MVP and it's taking people time to get their head around. The man won, and he deserved it.
Right.
And he should get that kind of call right there. Get the benefit of the doubt in an elimination game at home. I think it's a flagrant 1. Look, the windup is a dangerous play. If he misses by a little bit, I know it's a frustration foul. Kind of reminded me of that Andrew Bynum frustration foul on J.J. Barea a million years ago, right?
Yeah, the clothesline. That was a little different.
Okay, it was a dangerous play, And I understand why they called it. I just think, man, it's hard to do that to the MVP in the elimination game.
Well, and to your point, if we start judging intent or start trying to interpret intent, like, if we do that all across life, what are we doing? Minority Report with Tom Cruise? Because here's the deal. Like, this is the example I put out on Twitter to somebody who questioned that. And I'm like, a fender bender, when you have an accident with your vehicles, an inch or two can make it a tragedy, right? But you're not judging someone and their fender bender off what could have happened if it became a tragedy.
Right.
He swung, right? He tried to knock the ball off, and it ended up hitting him in the face. It wasn't his intent.
Absolutely. And I didn't get to hear his thought process. I missed his post-game interview. But the fact that he said he wanted to change momentum, I completely get that. It wasn't going for good with him right now. You get a technical foul, you fire up the season. Maybe you get a flagrant foul, you fire up your team, you fire up the crowd. But again, to throw the MVP out in an elimination game on a borderline call, it's frustrating, and it shows how soft the NBA is now, which is unfortunate.
I think also he got hurt by the fact that this was reviewed. Like, if it was, when you saw it in real time, it might have been something you could just be flagrant 1, let's move on. But because it's reviewed and you saw the full windup, they almost had no choice at that point. But that's part of the system here, right?
I think they had a choice. They could.
By the letter of the law, it's a flagrant 2. He wound up.
Up. I know. Intent, the malicious. They use all these whatever the word I'm looking for. They use all these big words. Malicious intent.
Yeah, you got it.
For my ear, but like I said, they try to make it seem like more than it was. But again, be aware of your surroundings. Know that you're in an elimination game in the home of the MVP. And to me, you let him slide with that. Give him a flagrant foul.
Yeah, I agree. All right, the Nuggets obviously had a difficult end to the season, so They overcame a ton, right? The injury to Jamal Murray, still finished third in the West and advanced past Portland in the first round. So, Ramona, where does Denver go from here?
They have to decide how much money they want to spend. Mm-hmm. It's an expensive team now. Okay, that's the thing. When you trade for Aaron Gordon, and now you're going to have to pay Michael Porter Jr. too. He's eligible for a big extension here. Like, that's a lot of money to be spending on this core. I think you have to do it, though. I think you have to decide, okay, we went all in this year. I really like that they went in, and then Jamal Murray gets hurt. Okay, so this was a team that was in the Western Conference Finals last year. They make a big move. They look great after they got Aaron Gordon until Jamal Murray got hurt. And now it gets to be really expensive. Okay, so Michael Porter Jr. eligible for the rookie extension. They have some free agents here. The free agents are not necessarily what I'm concerned about here. It's the extension for Michael Porter Jr. And Denver has not been a team that necessarily has been willing to go deep into that luxury tax for multiple years. But the good news with having great players this young eligible for these extensions, if you spend a bunch of money, mm-hmm. and it doesn't work out after a year or two, they still have a lot of value. Mm-hmm. You're not trying to trade a 35-year-old player here.
Yeah, I think they got to pay these guys. I think they got a great young core. Losing your best scorer, your second best scorer, is always going to hurt. But what I really liked is I forgot how good Will Barton was. I think he's mm-hmm. one of those free agents on that list that they need to re-sign. But you go home, recharge your batteries, and understand that you're going to get Jamal Murray back mid-season, maybe a little bit sooner, and enough time to rebuild your chemistry and make another run. But they have a great young core. Michael Porter Jr. showed flashes. This is an invaluable experience for the rest of their younger players. I think they did well. Obviously, you don't want to get swept ever, but they were swept out the playoffs. But I think this is a learning experience. You refuel, you pay the guys you need to pay, and come back full steam next year once Jamal Murray's healthy.
Michael Porter Jr. could have been the number one overall pick had he not gotten hurt in college, right? So that guy, from a talent perspective,
I think he's going to be a superstar.
Yeah, he's a walking 20-10, this kid.
He didn't do it in this series, though.
No.
And I think that is somewhat a function of age. He's not quite ready for that. He was like 14 points in a game in the series. I mean, and Aaron Gordon didn't do all that much for them in this series. Wasn't that effective? But I think that's also an effect of the Jamal Murray injury.
Correct.
Right? It's like when you have guys, Michael Porter Jr. was the cast as the, he gets third on this team, right? Yeah. Jokic first, Murray second, and maybe
Gordon fourth. Right.
Gordon fourth. But when everybody moves up a chair, sometimes you change the roles, mm-hmm. and they're not as effective in that role.
And then I saw a few times where Porter Jr. didn't look like he was moving right. Obviously, we're not going to make excuses, but we all know he has a back history. So continue to get healthy and stronger. But I agree, he's an up-and-coming star. Aaron Gordon is new to the playoffs. He got his feet wet again. This is experience that you can't teach unless you're actually in it. So, again, when Jamal Murray comes back midseason, all-star break next year, they have enough time to build their chemistry moving forward to the playoffs. And I think they have a great opportunity. Like Jeannie Buss told me, you always want to be in the contention talk. And I definitely think they're still in mm-hmm. the contention talk.
Yep, agreed wholeheartedly. Let's talk about the team that advanced, though. The Suns, Chris Paul, game-high 37 points as the Suns are headed to the Western Conference Finals for the first time in 11 years after completing that sweep over Denver. So, Matt, what's your biggest takeaway from the Suns sweep?
I think we got to put some respect on the Suns' name, because whoever said they saw the Phoenix Suns in the Western Conference Finals are lying, including me. I didn't see them. I just thought they had too much to overcome facing a Laker team early on, but they ended up being hurt, sweeping the MVP out of the playoffs. But this team is for real, and in the playoffs, you need two things. You need luck to stay injury-free, and health. And that's what they've been able to do. You know, we had a scare with Chris's stinger. He's been able to work that out. But he has all these young kids believing. He has Devin Booker playing at his best. Devin Booker said he's been waiting for this his whole career to show what he can do on this stage. He's showing up. I think his two closeout games are only behind Michael Jordan as far as points go. So this team is hot at the right time, as Miami was last year. So it's going to be a great battle to see who they play next round. But the Phoenix definitely have the chance to go to the finals.
I mean, they knocked out the defending champs, and they have seemed like a different team once they did that. Like, when you slay the dragon, all of a sudden you're walking around with so much confidence, and they're playing, it's just brimming with confidence. Devin Booker just looks like a man who is there. Like, he has seen the next level, and he is going to stay there.
Well, go ahead.
You know, and I honestly, I think some of it, I talked about this earlier with Monty Williams and that mental toughness. In that series against Chris Paul, and I'll go back and we did this press conference where I asked Monty Williams, like, man, isn't it? It was game three. They got boat raced at home, right? At the Lakers' home court. He got ejected, and all. It was a bad finish. And I said to Monty Williams, doesn't it seem kind of cruel this keeps happening to Chris Paul? He gets hurt in the playoffs and he can't play. And Monty picked he goes, I don't know what cruel is. I don't know if that's cruel. I know what cruel is. I mean, Monty Williams has been through some real things in his life.
Yes.
I mean, his wife was killed in a car accident. Like, that's cruel.
Right.
Okay? And I think when you have that life experience where you have this ability to put things in perspective like that, those guys on that team understand who Monty Williams and what he's been through in his life. And it puts like anything that happens on the basketball court into incredible perspective. They never got too low when they were down in that series, and they're not going to get too high when they're up right now.
Yeah, life experience and basketball experience has made a big difference for this team that, to your point, Matt, none of us saw in this particular situation. And real quick, I just want to shout out before we move on, DeAndre Ayton has played like the guy that we expected him to play like. And whether that's Chris Paul, a byproduct of Chris Paul and Devin Booker and Monty and everyone around him, he is now performing at a big, big level. All right, coming up next, Joel Embiid, speaking of big men performing, is averaging 35 and 10 in this series against the Hawks. What can the Hawks do to try to slow him down? We'll discuss that after the break. Hey guys, Woj reports that the Nets assistant coach Mike D'Antoni, Clippers assistant Chauncey Billups, and Spurs assistant Becky Hammond are all slated to be interviewed by the Blazers for their head coaching job. So Matt, what kind of coach do you think the Blazers need?
Fresh blood. I think Chauncey Billups would be a good look. Former player, point guard, mind, champion. Becky Hammond's been taught by the greatest coach possibly in the history of the game. So I think one of those two would be great.
I also think when Becky finally gets her shot, I'd like to see it be in a place like Portland, right, where you have stars like Dame and CJ. But I think Chauncey Billups is probably the favorite here, just because of his long relationship with Neil Olshey and all the players. But I think he'll be a great coach there if he gets
there. Yeah, I agree with you guys. Chauncey would be interesting because they need some defensive help on that team, for sure. One key to that Nets-Bucks series so far has been guard Jrue Holiday. The Holiday brothers are a rarity in sports. Three brothers who grew up in the same household, Jrue, Justin, and Aaron, and they all made it to the NBA. Our Ramona Shelburne, who's sitting right next to me, takes a closer look at the inside story of this basketball family.
December 28th, 2019. It was a historic day for the NBA and brothers Justin, Jrue, and Aaron Holiday.
First time in NBA history, three brothers on the floor.
Here we go, the jersey exchange.
You might say basketball is in the family's DNA. His parents, Toya and Sean, met as college basketball players at Arizona State in the early 1980s. Sean can still dunk at the age of 58. Toya was Pac-10 Player of the Year in 1982.
Did you put a basketball in their hands, or did they just start playing?
We didn't put a basketball in their hands. Sean and I both played ball, but they played all different sports.
They started off with soccer. They played baseball. They didn't like baseball. It was too boring. And so we tell them, you don't have to play basketball because we played. You can play or do whatever you want. It just so happened it worked out. They liked basketball, and they took it to another level.
Justin is the oldest. Jrue was born 14 months later. Younger sister Lauren, who played basketball at UCLA, is 3 years younger than Jrue. Aaron is the youngest in the family, born 7 years after Justin. And the age difference didn't stop the competition.
We used to make up different type of games in the house all the time. Like, we would play football and put pillows in our shirts and run and like tackle each other. We would play like floor hockey on the carpet with balls.
We used to just go out there and try to jump off the trampoline and dunk. That was the only time I could dunk. I actually had a crazy experience jumping off my dad's car in the front yard.
Cars were parked in front of the basketball hoop outside, and we couldn't really play. But Aaron got up on the car and like tried to dunk and fell and ended up breaking, I think, his hand. And Aaron was kind of a wild one.
We had to start telling our children, you can't dunk unless you can, on the ground, get up and really dunk. You can't use any other equipment.
Me and Jrue did play one-on-one a lot as kids, but we stopped for years because we ended up fighting.
We can play football. We did like roller hockey. We did everything else, playing tag, and me and Justin wouldn't fight. But basketball, we would scrap.
Justin and Jrue start as teammates at Campbell Hall High School in Sherman Oaks, California. But it was Jrue who developed into a blue-chip recruit.
I remember one time that Justin came to me and he says, you know what, I'm working hard and everybody's coming in the gym to see Jrue. I said, I know. We are going to buy Jrue a gift today. And he looked at me and said, what are you talking about? I'm trying to talk to you about my feelings. I said, baby, you know why? We're going to thank Jrue for whatever his talent is, because guess what? Guess who they get to see also in that gym? You have the opportunity to do your best inline to inline. That's all. And hey, and thank your brother afterwards.
Drew became the first Holiday to play in the NBA when he was drafted by Philadelphia in 2009. Older brother Justin made it to the league in 2012. And in 2018, Aaron was drafted by the Pacers. Three brothers, all fulfilling their NBA dreams.
I'll never take for granted for all three of us to be able to do that. And to me, it doesn't matter that we're the first to do it or the last, just the fact that like we're able to play against each other or be on the same court as one another is really, really cool.
Thanks, Ramona, for that great piece. We're gonna run ISOs here for Ramona. Speaking of her, more work for her. Here's what The Jump recommends today. Go to ESPN Plus, Ramona's piece on how Paul George is learning to create for others. Check that out now, because on the other side, we're going to talk about PG creating for others. Stick around here on The Jump.
I'm going to have to get commission.
All right, welcome back to The Jump. I'm George Sedano, joined by Matt Barnes and Ramona Shelburne. So Joel Embiid has been a human wrecking ball, destroying the Hawks through three games in this series. Even with a partially torn meniscus, Embiid has dominated every strategy, every defender the Hawks have thrown at him. So take a look at Embiid's video game-like numbers in this series. He's averaging 35 points a game on 53% shooting. You can't foul him either because he's shooting 81% from the line. So Matt, what else can the Hawks try to slow down Embiid with?
Don't feel bad. He does it to everyone. This is great experience for this young Atlanta Hawk team. I think this is a great experience. I don't see them, if they can steal one tonight at home, that would be a big plus. But I just, Philly has more talent. But again, this is a young, talented Atlanta team that should be happy about what happened this season and continue to build off this. But no one in the world can stop Embiid.
Look, Matt, you are a really successful television broadcaster, but they could use somebody like you in this series. There is no way to stop Joel Embiid. You have to throw three or four guys at him, and you have to get somebody like Matt to get under his skin.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of what you could do.
They don't have that.
And it's tough, too, because one of his weaknesses was passing out of double teams.
Yep.
Starting to understand when the double and triple teams come, who is make the easy pass, not the fancy pass, make the easy pass. So it makes hard to double-team him, and he can take you out to the three-point line and go by you. So there's nothing they can really do again. Like I said, I think they've had a great season, exceeded expectations, and just take this on the chin as experienced. Trae Young is a superstar, and they got a good supporting cast around him.
The thing I'd say, though, is that Joel has worked on this. Like, this is
– yes.
When Joel has failed in the playoffs before, it's been because teams like the Raptors would, like, blitz him, or the Celtics, they would get, like, three or four guys on him, and he would have to – he would panic when that double or triple-team came.
Now he accepts it, and he
waits.
Yeah.
He waits until the right moment, until the shooter is available, until somebody's there. And I think that has been the biggest evolution in Embiid. And so really the choice is, do you let Joel just go for 35 and 10 or maybe even 40? I mean, he can score whatever he wants, but just try to stop everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's probably the best way, because I don't know that you can just blitz him anymore.
Yeah, no, it's tough. I think people don't understand how tough. I came in the league when they used to double team and bigs had a hard time passing out the post for some reason. Joel Embiid had that same experience. So I think he understands, and Ramona said it perfectly. He invites the double team now and makes plays for the rest of his team. And when he starts doing that, there's nothing you can do.
And shout out to him. He called it. He told you that in that story you wrote earlier in the year that he was going to be an MVP-type player this year, and he's certainly proven that. So, all right, in the West, there's another series going on, heading to a pivotal game four. Paul George bounced back from a rough start in Utah to help the Clippers climb back into this series with the Jazz. PG dropped 31 on 50% shooting and dishing out 5 assists in the Clippers' game 3 blowout win. So, Ramona, do you trust PG to perform at a high level tonight in game 4?
I think he will. I mean, look, here's the thing with Paul. He's a streaky shooter, and he always has been. So it's not always – sometimes people like to say, oh, he's having a bad game because it's in his head. No, he's just a streaky player.
Yes.
Okay, but the difference for him this year, and this is what the piece we wrote today was with him and Chauncey Billups, is he's creating for others. Like, he's a playmaker now, and Chauncey's literally having, like, daily film sessions with him, teaching how to think the game like a point guard. So if his shot's not falling, if he's having on one of those down streaks there, he can create for others, and that's what they're asking him to do in this offense now.
He's averaging 26, 7.5, and nearly 5 assists a game, and everyone wants to give him a hard time. I mean, this guy's been playing well. I think they obviously want more from him, but I trust in him. Like I said, like Ramona said, he's always been a streaky type player. So when he gets hot, it's trouble. They're going to need him and Kawhi to hit on all cylinders, and I think they can come back from this 0-2 deficit and end up winning this series.
So I agree with you. We also just got word that Mike Conley will be out for tonight. Matt, if Mike Conley doesn't play in this series, this is a big problem for the Jets.
This is trouble, and even a bigger problem is, you know, Donovan Mitchell tweaked his right ankle again and possibly could have returned, but Quinn kept him out because the game got out of hand. But is he really going to be full strength? To me, you blitz him and make everyone else beat you and see what happens. But without Mike Conley, their all-star point guard, it's going to be a tough road.
I was expecting Conley to sit out this game, though. I mean, honestly, if you want Conley, but Conley's got to play in this series, but I'd rather have him come back in game five at home.
Okay, fair enough. All right, that'll do it for us. Thanks to Matt and Ramona for joining us today. Rachel will be back in this seat tomorrow, so don't worry about it. Thanks for watching.